The subject was booked under Section 601, in danger of leading an idle, dissolute, or immoral life.
Podcasting for you almost live on October the 31st, Halloween Day. This is the voice of post-evangelicals everywhere, a voice of sanity in the midst of the evangelical circus. This is Internet Monk Radio, podcast number 76.
I'm sorry, that was highly inappropriate.
Greetings out there, podcast fans. This is your Internet Monk, Michael Spencer, rejoining you after a brief delay in podcast production caused by the intrusion of something called real life into my internet experience. Hey, everybody, it's October 31st, and I'm 51 years old. Therefore, my mind is full of memories of something many of you younger evangelicals don't know anything about, and that is the classic American Halloween. Yes, the classic American Halloween, pre-Mike Warnke. And if you don't know what I mean by that, then get your Google and get started. Pre-Mike Warnke, before Christians decided they had to ruin, and I mean ruin with a capital R, one of the really great things about growing up in contemporary America, post-war America at least, I'm still ticked off about what evangelicals and fundamentalists have done to Halloween. You are listening to a person who, as a youth minister, gave some of the greatest efforts I've ever given to haunted hayrides, Halloween banquets with scary movies, haunted houses in the on the church property that were enthusiastically embraced and supported by the folks with whom I worked and raised lots of money and did all kinds of good things with them. And all that grows out of my experience of childhood of being part of a big Jerry Falwell type fundamentalist Baptist church, where nobody, and I mean nobody, who was toting those Scofield Bibles and preaching the fundamentalist gospel of no drinking and no dancing and no divorce, nobody had any problem with kids dressing up in costumes and going door to door. If you would have said, that's satanic, it's the devil's day, you would have been thought a complete idiot by moderately educated people. But, of course, that simple holiday of walking around your neighborhood dressed in some silly little costume, my specialty was dressing like a scarecrow. I'd stuff myself with hay and itch for 3 or 4 days later. Walk around the neighborhood and go to all the houses that I never, of course, could go to during the rest of the year and knock on strange doors, and there would be, guess what, friendly adults. Friendly adults! They would say, oh, you're so cute, and they'd give you candy, and you really had a great time. And nobody went home and examined the entrails of any animals. Nobody did anything. In the realm of animal sacrifice, nobody attempted to invoke the spirit of a Harry Potter and broomstick around the neighborhood. No, we went back and watched terrible things like The Ghost and Mr. Chicken and bad Vincent Price movies. It's a wonder any of us are sane today. You people who took this away from us, bad, bad, you're very bad, and I do not forgive you.
What a dumb thing to do. I'll bet you wouldn't have done anything like this if Mom and Dad were here.
Oh, we got to keep it coming. There's more where that came from. So now we have a new October 31st holiday, Reformation Day. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Christian calendar, November the 1st is All Saints Day. There are different Saints Days throughout the year, and depending on what branch of the Christian family you hang out with, different saints are emphasized on your version of the Christian calendar. But you get one day, November the 1st, for the commemoration of All Saints. And if you go to a good Anglican church, you might sing, "For all the saints who from their labors rest." Great song. Or you might remember the martyrs on All Saints Day. It's a good emphasis. Or you might talk about heaven. That's a pretty good emphasis. Those sorts of things. And so we've got a really good day there in the Christian calendar to work with. But why should we work with that when we can stress our differences with Roman Catholics? I don't have any problems with the Reformation, okay? Despite what you may be reading into what I read on my wrote on my blog about letting some of the air out of your Reformation Day balloons, I'm not in any way disowning the Reformation. When it comes to the areas where I disagree with the Roman Catholic Church, I am a Reformation Christian. It's right over there in the sidebar somewhere. I'm a Reformation Christian. I like that. I like the five solas. I tell people I basically make my living on the five solas. I do love and appreciate those brothers who, in a time when those things were obscured, and maybe in some places in real danger of complete loss, in a time in which the church, visible at least, was in true need of reform, I have great appreciation for all those who undertook the work of Reformation. I have great appreciation for the price that they paid. But I got to tell you that the sort of triumphalism that is invested in an idea like Reformation Day needs to be handled very carefully. So I'll use the sort of "what do we tell our children" test, which is one of my best tests that I have for kind of weighing something out. Would it be okay to say, "Let's dress up like Martin Luther and nail the 95 Theses on the door down in the church basement"? I don't have any problem with that. But, you know, can we say that there's only one Holy Catholic Apostolic Church of Jesus Christ? And however you read the story, and scholars read the story differently, and this is part of my problem, is I've read way too much Reformation stuff, okay? I've read all kinds of Luther biographies, histories of the Reformation, Reformation theology, and it's starting to kind of get in my mind that there is a great deal of more obscurity about exactly what's going on there than we like to admit, and that there is a tendency right there at that point to say it's a team sport instead of it's the division of one Holy Catholic Apostolic Church, and that we should be, and I hate to say this, sort of celebrating the divorce. And like any divorce, you know, everybody points their finger at the other guy. But having been around a lot of divorces in my own family and elsewhere, they're just not a good thing. Sometimes necessary. Sometimes absolutely necessary. Sometimes much good comes from it. And I believe good came from this. And I'm a Protestant and will always be one. But it's a grievous thing. And from it have come good things. And from it have come things that are not so good. And one of the things that is not so good is that we have now begun to see the church as our denomination or our movement or the people who think and talk like us. And the whole idea of the one Holy Catholic Apostolic Church, that beautiful thing that Jesus prayed for, that thing that we confess in our most basic creeds, is just not precious to us. And I have got to say I'm sadder than ever that clearly a lot of people do not believe in that aspect of our creed. They don't believe it. They believe that there's a short list of those who are truly the church, and they're on it, and a few people like them. And I am very glad to have come out of that. And I don't say that in a sort of, Lord, I thank you, I'm not like other men. I recognize a valid critique of some emerging type Christians is that there's a kind of look down their nose bit at other people. I don't want that. But you know, could you go to the front door of the Catholic Church in your community and nail those things there today? Or would you want to do something else? Would you want to, you know, have a discussion, a forum, a debate, a symposium, a workshop, you know, how about a dinner? How about build a house together? How about show that despite, you know, our differences, that we get enough together in Jesus that we don't hate each other, we're not killing each other anymore, and we're not saying because I am right in comparison to this person or because I'm not that church, then I can jump up and down and celebrate. As one IM commenter said, this seems to be the day that we can say with relish and glee, I am of Paul, I am of Apollos. And I would love to say, for all the saints, Orthodox, Catholic, Protestant, Evangelical, Pentecostal, every age, for all the saints, why don't we celebrate that? You know, why don't we just draw that circle a little bigger? All of them have been reformers and reforming, you know, and some in the church and some out, and some understood and some misunderstood. But why can't it all be us instead of us versus them? Ah, I'm a dreamer.
You're despicable.
Last night, my friend Keith and I traveled about 40 miles away from where we live to be part of a Celebrate Recovery evening at a church in the adjacent county. Now, if you don't know about Celebrate Recovery, it is a program started at Saddleback Valley Church by Rick Warren and John Baker. It integrates the classic 12-step recovery principles into an explicitly Christian context. And I have heard a lot of good things about it. I started hearing about it, maybe a year ago, and then spent some time looking into it. I have some interest in the recovery movement. I have some interest in it personally. I spent some very good years in a church establishing a ministry called Alcoholics for Christ that was a 12-step ministry explicitly based on the gospel and using the scriptures. And I believe Alcoholics for Christ probably has a website still out there, a very good ministry. And I'm interested in this. And one of the things I'm interested in is the basis of community. Because I am part of a Christian community and I observe things in the church from that standpoint, I realize that influences the way I see any particular group of Christians. I wanted to see if this idea of everybody coming in the door has identified the way in which they're broken and they're prepared to stand up and say, you know, hello, I'm Michael. I'm a believer in Jesus. And, I struggle with food addiction and anger issues, that everybody was prepared to do that. I wanted to see what difference that made. And it so happened that the night we were there, it was more of a celebration. They were having the mother of all potlucks and bands and testimony. It was a good evening. There was a lot of people there. Tuesday evening at a little country church in southeast Kentucky, there were 120 people there. There were 70 cars in the parking lot. And I got to tell you, you don't see that around here. You don't see churches investing in that kind of program. You don't see churches pursuing that. Now, this is a church that has a lot of things going on, a lot of things going right. And I'm going to do some serious repenting in print for a number of things I've said about some of the folks on the Rick Warren side of the fence. So those of you that have been fans of those posts, get ready. I'm going to cook some crow and I'm going to eat it. Not that there's nothing to criticize, but I realize that I've been in somewhat of a fog in my blogging career with these theological types who have got A.W. Pink disease. If they sit around with three or four other like-minded theologians, then they just feel really good about themselves, and they feel really bad about anybody who's actually, you know, preaching the gospel with zeal, witnessing to people with zeal, starting ministries that they wouldn't think to start with zeal. They just despise zeal. And when I walk into an atmosphere like I was in last night, there's a lot of zeal. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of, we want you to know Jesus Christ, and we want you to have a changed life. We want the evidence of what's going on to be changed life and testimonies of changed lives. Now, I know this isn't lost in Reformation Christianity. I know it's not lost in many reform-minded Southern Baptist brothers and sisters and friends of mine. But it can get lost. It can get lost. And I may talk some about that in some future blog posts in terms of are we going to honestly talk about evangelism and theology and how these things interact together. But I come away from this experience realizing that when you create a commonality around this is where I'm broken, and I'm open to come together with Christians and to seek in Jesus Christ the answer for my specific brokenness, that things happen. I'm very curious why specific kinds of brokenness versus general sinfulness is a problem for so many people. You hear what I'm saying? If we get up and say, let's talk about sin, and Christ forgives sin, and Christ's a mediator between God and man to deal with sin, everybody is fine. But when you start saying Christ changes the lives of people with specific problems, he deals with people who have woundedness and brokenness that you can put a name on. Now, he may not heal it instantly, but he certainly forgives the sinful component that's there and gives you in the gospel, in the kingdom, in the church, a new community where you can network into a whole new way of living that can be without drugs or without whatever this thing happens to be that you're carrying with you. Why is it that when we get specific, everybody gets nervous? All of a sudden, then you're therapeutic and those sorts of things. There's something disingenuous about the fact that I can't see those people, those 120 people that are there around this common entry point of brokenness. All I can see is, well, the preaching's not quite what it needs to be in the most theologically correct context. And all the talk about Reformation that will go on a Reformation day like today, all the talk about we need reform and we need healthier churches and we need to reform our Southern Baptist Convention. I've been reading these posts all day long, and I'm grateful for them, and I want to be part of that, and I want to contribute to that. But listen, reformed-minded people, our zeal for evangelism and our zeal for people and our zeal for specific kinds of compassion to specific problems is just really poor. Really poor. And we've kind of developed one of those attitudes about like, well, you know, if we do anything, that proves that we're not hyper-Calvinists and we really feel good about ourselves. And then we go down and look at a church that's zealous for good works. You know, the good works that grace leads to there in Ephesians 2, the good works that God ordained for us to walk in. They're zealous for those. We're very suspicious because we see all these theological landmines. And I guess would somebody feel better if they said, we're going to stop the program until everybody is theologically certified? I think I'm going to take a new look at this. And, I was not theologically impressed, but I was moved as a person by the community that I saw in this Celebrate Recovery meeting. It was a way of being church that was Christian to the core, but was open and outreaching to people who were not Christian in the most helpful way possible. Here is your problem. Jesus Christ does make a difference. As I said, not instant healing or casting out demons so you never have this, but here's a community, a way of life, a message, a Bible, an authority, a new way of seeing yourself. Here are some things that make a difference, and we are zealous for you to know and experience this. That is a good thing. That is a good thing. Hey, that's all I got to say today. You can look at the archive for this podcast at internetmonk.com up under the Internet Monk Radio tab. Until next time, this is Michael Spencer, and I'll see you.